Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email on air at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Tuesday the 29th of May. Welcome to your nightly news and current affairs show, The Informer. I'm your host, Darcy Meehan. Tonight on the show, we continue our look at the realities of gay conversion therapy in Australia with Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International founder, Anthony Van Brown. We speak to WA's Jordan Bruno, who won Mr. Gay World over the weekend. And do you know your abortion rights in every Australian state? We spent the weekend looking at a referendum in Ireland. But what about here at home?
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949, email on air at joy.org.au or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
On last night's episode of The Informer, we discussed Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International report looking at gay conversion therapy in Australia with Abbey founder Anthony Van Brown. Abbey serves individuals, churches, denominations, leaders, and religious organizations in a respectful and non-confrontational way along their journey to understand LGBTI people, their community, and relationships. We often make assumptions about conversion therapy based on media from the UK and the USA, which has led to miscommunications with what it means here in Australia. The Abbey Report on Conversion Therapy in Australia is a detailed look at our past, with sobering data about our present that can help us to make real change about the future of conversion therapy in Australia. Now we continue DNR Curie's conversation with Ambassador and Bridge Builders International founder, Anthony Van Brown, exploring why this issue is so important to him, with some harsh realities of religious conversion therapy in Australia, and how Abbey are trying to achieve change for the better.
The Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International is an organisation that I founded in 2013. Going back two steps further from that, of course, my autobiography was released in 2004, which produced an avalanche of emails into my inbox of people saying, your story is my story. And tell me their horror stories about, you know, what had happened to them within Christian context with families and friends. Out of that, then, I kind of got a Freedom to Be, and a Freedom to Be with a national network of LGBTI people, Christian backgrounds. And that went really well, and that grew. But what I saw, Dean, very quickly was that, you know, we can land at the bottom of the cliff forever, but what we need to really do is build things at the top of the cliff. That brings us back to Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International. So my role within that is to reach out to churches, Christian leaders, denominations, organizations, to educate and inform them about LGBTI people, our community, and our relationships.
So this is something which you talk about in your research, how you have been on both sides of the fence when it comes to this issue. Could you just tell me a bit more about that?
When I was a teenager, my final year of high school, when I realised that I was, you know, attracted to the same gender, the dictionary told me that that meant I was a sexual pervert. Of course, this was in the 1968-69, which was a criminal offence. Mental health professionals, I mean, people were institutionalised in those days and people were having aversion therapy. So it was very frightening as a young teenager to realise this was me. And I went to a psychiatrist after attempted suicide was discovered by my parents. And I went to a psychiatrist then to change my sexual orientation. So that's back in 1969. But then my willpower, and then that didn't work. And then I turned to Christianity, became what would be called a born-again Christian. And then went on that journey of exorcisms and went into one of the first in the world to go into a residential ex-gay program to try and change my orientation. Finally getting married, of course, having children, becoming a high-profile preacher. And then everything fell apart when I fell in love with a man at the age of 40. At that point, I've had 22 years of trying to change my orientation, struggling daily with that and praying and fasting and doing everything. So I was really exhausted. But falling in love, of course, changes everything. You realize this isn't about sex. This is actually about something much more profound. This is about love. But, of course, I had had over 20 years of conditioning that this was a sin, that this was an illness, that this was an abomination. So when I resigned from the ministry, my coming out was not an empowering coming out. It was filled with shame still, and it was more a reluctant acceptance because I was just exhausted.
Just to jump back with what you were saying, so was it surprising when so many people were reaching out and saying, this is my story too, I know what you went through?
Look, it was surprising because, you know, for many of us, and myself included, we tended to think we were the only ones because we had no connection with any other gay or lesbian people which had left the church or who had, in our minds, given themselves over to homosexuality. So there'd be no contact. So I was really quite overwhelmed by the flood of emails into my inbox. But, of course, I could say it was like my inbox became a microscope into a hidden world, a world of people who had unresolved issues around their sexuality, around their faith, or both, that I've never spoken to a single soul about that previously.
Do you think a lot of that has to come from people's actual stories and people's actual dialogues, not just from the LGBTIQA plus community, but also survivors of ex-gay therapy and religious people? We really need to create a space where we can hear more conversations of the people that need to be allowed to step up and speak?
Exactly. You know, whenever I've had people come to me to tell me their story, you know, I've got permission from them to share their stories, and I've collected hundreds and hundreds of these stories. They are available. And, you know, there is research being done in this area. There is already so many stories out there of the harm that's happened and the years that have been wasted and the lives that have been lost because of this outdated belief that homosexuality is a sin or is a illness.
So do you think that's the next stage and next challenge that we really have to tackle if we want to take this step further?
Yes, that's been the issue for a long time. But now it's become, as we've knocked out the other things which are in the way, now we can really focus upon this. And the gay Christian movement is a huge movement. And you know, there was a time when you would never use those two terms together, gay Christian. But as I mentioned already, there are whole denominations now which are serving other LGBTI people, denominations which will ordain LGBTI people. So, you know, things are changing, but not within the evangelical, Pentecostal and charismatic streams. They're the ones that are still lagging behind, a long way behind, actually. And we have a lot of work to do there. And the work will not be done by attacking people because, as we all know, if anyone attacks us, we're going to get our backup. And that's why Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International has been taking a role of reaching out with dialogue, not attacking people, you know.
One of the things as well with us confusing that kind of dialogue, it then creates further spaces for there to create a divide between the what we really need to be fighting and what we think we're fighting, and that can cause further damage.
It can. You know, if we look back now at the gay Christian movement, I mean, there was a time, the gay Christian movement really started one year before Stonewall in Los Angeles, when a minister, the Reverend Floyd Perry, who was Pentecostal, said you can be gay and Christian and held a meeting in his lounge room. And we've seen that grow and grow and grow now. And, you know, there are whole denominations which are affirming and churches which are affirming and ministers. And that's taken a lot of work over a lot of decades. And there's going to be a lot of work that we need to do also around religious, what we call religious gay conversion therapy.
The current efforts that are being made at the moment in regards to our dialogue, in regard to this that are playing out in the media, they're created in such a way that, especially after reading your report, trying to ban gay conversion therapy doesn't really seem to be the end of the story.
No, no. And I've been working on several phases with this. Like, as I pointed out in the report, the phase one for me was let's target the organisations and the ex-gay leaders. And now the majority of those have either closed down, rebranded to a celibacy model, or they've gone underground a little bit. But, of course, the next phase is attacked on the actual belief system. which says that homosexuality is not part of God's plan, not part of God's order, and that, you know, that God's plan is that all people be heterosexual.
That was Dino Curie with Anthony Venn Brown, founder of Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International. You can find a copy of the report on our social media or via abbi.org.au. If this story has raised any personal concerns, or you yourself have been struggling with thoughts of self-harm or feel you are in crisis, you can contact Lifeline on 13 11 14 or online at lifeline.org.au. For general support and questions or concerns on LGBTQI issues, you can contact the team at QLife on 1800 184 527 or for web counselling at qlife.org.au. Or you can contact Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36 or at beyondblue.org.au. They're all there to help. And remember, if it's an emergency or you're in immediate risk of harm, always contact 000.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
During the weekend, the world eagerly watched as the Irish abortion referendum results were announced. It was a landslide win for abortion rights in Ireland. But what are your rights at home? Here in Australia, do you know what the laws are in each state when it comes to abortion and your rights? The Informer's Rachel Tyler-Jones takes us state by state.
The Republic of Ireland, one of the most Catholic countries in the world, has voted overwhelmingly in favour of repealing its restrictive abortion laws in a nationwide referendum held last Friday. Exit polls have shown that many of those surveyed do not necessarily support abortion. They do, however, support a woman's right to choose when it comes to abortion, and it is believed that this distinction has been one of the reasons that the referendum was ultimately successful. Abortion will remain illegal in most cases in Northern Ireland, which is legally part of the United Kingdom. This is because the 1967 Abortion Act, which legalised abortion in Britain, specifically excludes Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland has some of the most restrictive abortion laws in Europe. Not even rape or fatal fetal abnormality are considered legal grounds for a termination. Despite this, and despite the result in the Republic of Ireland, as well as pressure from her own cabinet, British Prime Minister Theresa May has refused to back reform of Northern Ireland's anti-abortion laws. Ireland and Northern Ireland are not the only neighbours with soon-to-be wildly different abortion laws. Here in Australia, abortion is legalised on a state-by-state basis, and each state is different. In New South Wales, abortion is a criminal offence, except in special circumstances. A doctor may only administer an abortion legally if they believe that continuing a pregnancy is a risk to a woman's physical or mental health. Rape, incest, and fetal abnormality are not grounds for illegal abortion. Getting an abortion illegally is punishable by up to 10 years imprisonment. Abortion is also illegal in Queensland, where a woman who unlawfully procures an abortion may face up to 7 years imprisonment, and anyone unlawfully performing an abortion can face up to 14 years in jail. As in New South Wales, an abortion may be legal if a doctor believes a woman's health is in serious danger, which does not include cases of rape, incest, or fetal abnormality. In both Queensland and New South Wales, women do have non-legal abortions. However, those women and the doctors who perform them risk criminal charges and imprisonment. In South Australia, abortion is legal up to 28 weeks into a pregnancy if two doctors agree that a woman's physical or mental health is endangered by the pregnancy, or if there is a risk that the child is likely to be born with a serious abnormality. Women in South Australia who do not meet these requirements can still be charged for having an unlawful abortion. In Western Australia, abortion is legal up to 20 weeks into the pregnancy. Women must be given the opportunity to participate in counselling before the procedure is performed. And if you are under 16 years of age, one parent must be informed. After 20 weeks, abortion becomes very strict in Western Australia, although it is still possible in specific medical cases. In the Northern Territory, abortion is legal up to 23 weeks into a pregnancy. Prior to 14 weeks, the approval of one medical practitioner is required, and after 14 weeks, two doctors sign off on the procedure. After 23 weeks, a pregnant woman's life must be in danger before a pregnancy can be legally terminated. In Tasmania, abortion is technically legal up to 16 weeks, and legal after 16 weeks with the approval of two doctors. However, access to abortion is severely limited, as few doctors in Tasmania currently provide termination services, and the state's only catered abortion clinic closed in January of this year. In response to the clinic's closure, the Tasmanian government is offering travel assistance to those referred to Melbourne by their GP for surgical abortions. However, there is mounting pressure on the Tasmanian government to improve access within the state. In Victoria, abortion is legal up to 24 weeks and legal after 24 weeks with the approval of two doctors who must agree that it is in the patient's best interest based on physical, psychological and social circumstances. In Victoria, Tasmania and the Northern Territory, buffer zone laws have been passed which make it illegal for anti-abortion protesters to harass or film people within 150 metres of an abortion clinic. In the ACT, abortion is legal, although it must be provided by a medical doctor in an approved medical facility. The ACT also has privacy zones, which make it illegal to protest within 50 metres of an abortion clinic. Regardless of legality, an abortion is a costly procedure. A 2017 study found that the average cost of a first trimester abortion was about $500 after the Medicare rebate, which can increase to $1,500 after the rebate for procedures between 13 and 19 weeks, and $7,700 for procedures beyond 19 weeks. Add this to the possible costs of travel, accommodation, GP referrals, medical tests and lost wages, and it is unsurprising that cost is a prohibitive barrier for many women who wish to or need to access an abortion. Much like abortion law, finding information on abortion in Australia isn't straightforward. We will include details on the Informer page at joy.org.au of organisations in each state and territory which offer more comprehensive information on abortion and how it can be accessed. Or grab a pen and keep listening. If you need more information about abortion in Queensland or New South Wales, Children by Choice is a Brisbane-based not-for-profit organisation that offers pro-choice, client-centred information on all unplanned pregnancy options, including abortion, adoption and parenting. To find out more, visit childrenbychoice.org.au or call 1800 177 725 Queensland-wide. If you're located in New South Wales, the information on this website is still helpful and the list of interstate abortion providers is relevant to those living in both Queensland and New South Wales, where abortion is, for the most part, illegal. If you are in South Australia, Shine SA is a leading not-for-profit provider of both primary care services and education for sexual and relationship well-being. They offer free drop-in clinics for young people under the age of 25, they're actively LGBTI friendly, and if you search the word abortion on their website, their fact sheet on abortion is accessible and very informative. To find out more, visit shinesa.org.au or call 1300 794 584. For those in the Northern Territory, the Family Planning Welfare Association of the Northern Territory is a not-for-profit organisation that offers, among other services, information on how to access pregnancy termination services in the Northern Territory. To find out more, visit fpwnt.com.au or call 0889480144. If you are located in Tasmania, you can access information on abortion in Tasmania, including information on travel assistance if you have to travel to Melbourne to access pregnancy termination services, by contacting the statewide not-for-profit Family Planning Tasmania. To find out more, visit fpt.asn.au. If you are located in Victoria, and for those in Tasmania who may need to travel to access abortion services, you can access information through Family Planning Victoria. To find out more, visit the website at fpv.org.au or, for general advice and information over the phone, call the Box Hill Clinic and ask to speak with a nurse for reproductive and sexual health advice on 1800 013 952. For those in Western Australia, we were unable to find a dedicated not-for-profit organisation offering information on abortion. However, most abortions in Western Australia are accessed through the public system, so your GP should be able to advise you on your options. If this isn't appropriate in your case, and for those who may not have easy access to a clinic Australia-wide, there is another option. There are for-profit companies that offer medical abortion remotely via a phone consultation. A medical abortion or non-surgical abortion involves taking medication to induce a termination. If you Google abortion by telephone Australia, some of these services will come up on the first results page. Before accessing these services, it is recommended that you speak to a medical professional you trust to ensure that they are right for you and to confirm that the service you are considering accessing is going to act in your best interests.
There is still more to come on Joy's The Informer, the news program from an LGBTI perspective.
Former My Kitchen Rules contestant Jordan Bruno has become the first Australian to win the Mr. Gay World 2018 title at the finale held in Kitchener, South Africa on the weekend. The competition inspires and empowers gay men to gather in a public performance and fight for human rights. Bruno won 6 out of 12 possible awards, including Personal Interview, Social Responsibility, Best Informal Wear, Public Online Vote, Photogenic, and Face of 2018. But the competition is about more than looks. It's about finding and developing a future leader within the LGBTI community, with candidates chosen according to attributes such as leadership, reliability, communication, and the ability to engage with the wider LGBTI community. The Informer's Dina Curie spoke to Mr. Gay World 2018 after celebrating with fellow contestants. But first, let's recap. Who is Jordan Bruno? Not only Mr. Gay Australia, but Mr. Gay World as well.
G'day, my name is Jordan Bruno and I'm representing Australia at Mr. Gay World. For me, this competition is extremely important because it's giving a voice to LGBTI role models across the world that have amazing social missions and amazing causes they're fighting for, promoting a healthy and safe gay community. I guess a little bit about myself. I was an activist and ambassador for marriage equality in Australia last year, and we achieved it in December. Woo! Yay! And I've also released a cookbook with all profits going to LGBTI charities that have a focus on mental health awareness of gay kids, preventing mental illness and suicide. Furthermore, I run an LGBTI cooking school that is designed to help network and support LGBTI kids. And I'm looking to take all my values and my social work to an international level and hopefully support even more gay people to an extent that I haven't been able to do before. I'm really looking forward to meeting all the other great guys that are participating in this competition and hoping we can achieve some great things together. Being gay is something to be proud of, and I'm hoping as a group we can promote that to the world.
To all the delegates, I want you to know that all of you are winners by virtue of coming to this beautiful city of Knysna and taking part in this competition. But also, this competition is a winner because you have taken part. Mr. Gay World 2018 is... Australia!
What was it like when you were announced the winner? Because you're the first Australian to win Mr. World Gay.
Yes. Really surreal, to be honest. I was overwhelmed and I didn't actually think I was going to take out the title. To be recognised by the panel of judges that have done so much for the LGBTI community across the world, it means the world. And just to have that acknowledgement, yeah, it made me feel complete.
What was the competition like?
The competition, it's really full on. It challenges you spiritually, emotionally, and physically. There's a huge range of challenges, and you're constantly social, so you've got to put your best foot forward the whole time. I haven't done anything like this before, and it was challenging in many ways that I didn't expect, especially emotionally, because I am so passionate about these issues. So it does take a toll on your body, but it's been an incredible experience, and I've left with so many friends, so I'm humbled and grateful.
It must be really wonderful because you're also surrounded, I mean, as exhausting as it must be, you're also surrounded by other people who have that same passion for their community from all around the world.
Yep, exactly. The best thing about the competition is it unites countries across the world with people that all have the same mission, and that's to progress LGBTI rights. So when you put that group of people in the one room, you know that you're going to get an amazing energy and an amazing result. And although there's always turbulence and rocky situations, when you're fighting for the same cause, you end up coming together.
Were there any causes that you from other competitors that you were particularly taken with that you thought were fantastic?
Yeah, I mean, Ricky, the runner-up from New Zealand, good friend of mine, and honestly, he's worthy of the title himself. He is so incredible. His work for HIV and removing stigma is to be applauded. So I'm really honoured to call him a friend, if not a brother. And then India's work as well. It's illegal to be gay where he's from and to have public displays of affection. And he's posting photos of him and I kissing because he wants to increase visibility and let people know that it is okay and he's not scared of the consequences. So to put your life on the line like that and your livelihood, to make a stance against what you believe in, I think that's pretty special.
Does it give you an even bigger appreciation for the title that you now hold?
Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done with the title I now hold. I've got to go forth with it and really make a difference and do some good things. I guess a lot of people are looking up to me, but I'm looking at a lot of people looking up to them, and I think we just need to be visible together, and that's how we can grow. But I definitely think it's going to spur some action.
One of the great things about this competition is it really gives everyone individually a platform within their own country to push forward rights and things that are passionate. But now you're not only Mr. Gay Australia, but also you're Mr. Gay World. So, I mean, I know it's crazy to ask you what next, or because you've only just been given the title, but you've got to be quite inspired by the people you've met. So what you have a plan already. Well, then what's your plan?
So, first of all, with all the delegates that I've competed with, all their campaigns are my campaigns and vice versa. So it's going to be my job to represent them in Australia and across the world with everything they want to do. I have to be a voice for them as much as they are going to be a voice for me. It's a team thing and it's a team title. Secondly, I want to release a line of LGBTI-focused videos that are covering issues within the queer community. So body shaming, bottom shaming, femme shaming, lesbian inclusion and inclusion in LGBTI events, transsexual intersex awareness, and make this content digestible by mainstream media so we can share it with the world. Otherwise, I want to publish a second cookbook and have all profits go to gay charity and organizations in Indonesia who are actually moving backwards instead of going forwards. So they're my three big challenges in the near future that I hope to get a head start on.
Did you ever think when you went, yep, I'm going to put my foot forward, I'm going to step into this and I'm going to create a visible platform for myself, that this is where the journey would end up for you?
No, honestly. I honestly think it started with Marriage Equality in Western Australia when they were looking for campaign managers, and I put my hand up just because no one else wanted to do it. And I was timid and scared and I was like, is this really for me? Can I do this? And it's just happened from there because there's been a need for it and a demand. And it's not necessarily always me being like, this is what I want to do, but it's people saying, I need you to do this and I can't say no. So I've just fallen into this cycle of representing LGBTI rights. And now I've kind of realized maybe this is my calling in life and I'm going to run with this title and really do good things and do what I've been doing, but do it on a bigger scale.
Congratulations to Australia's own Mr. Gay World, Jordan Bruno.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
That's it for another episode of The Informer, bringing you news and current affairs from Australia's LGBTI communities. A podcast of tonight's Informer will be available to download soon at joy.org.au or on your preferred podcast platform. Don't forget to follow us on social media at The Informer on Joy 94.9 on Facebook and at The Informer Joy on Twitter. If you have a story or tip you would like to share with us, get in touch at theinformer@joy.org.au. You've been listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. I'm Darcy Meehan.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.